Hi, I'm Susan Clark.
And I'm Chris Marie Campbell.
Welcome to the Beauty of Conflict podcast. Have you ever wanted to take some of what you've learned on the podcast to the next level? Well, check out our new step-by-step, easy-to-use team kit to get your team from avoiding conflict to discovering the beauty in conflict.
To learn more, go to www.thriveinc.com/teamkit. That's www.thriveinc.com/teamkit. Hi, this is Chris Marie Campbell.
And I'm Susan Clark.
And today we have a special guest, Lawrence Conlon. And Lawrence, we know from many years of studying with you meditation. And I'll just share your bio, Lawrence. Lawrence brings 50 years of conscious inner work and how to bring the fruits of that into the outer life. His journey has included being gifted by some long-term quality time with very high masters. And this is a quote, "Through much study as a personal and professional experiment, I have integrated the gifts of a challenging life into personal revelations. As a result, I have been helping thousands integrate their higher self into their survival reflexes at the primitive brain. The results are truly magical in how much more freedom, joy, unconditional love, soul passion, and ease that have unfolded for people of every walk and level of trauma or enlightenment," which I agree with.
Yes.
And Lawrence has been a chiropractor for 40 plus years, specifically a network chiropractor. And I just thought this was an interesting fact. You went to Seattle University on a baseball scholarship and went into the military. And after 4 years of active duty, became a teacher of transcendental meditation and then taught that back to the military, which I thought was so neat, helping the military. So welcome, Lawrence. We're really happy to have you.
Yes.
Thank you. I was listening to that and going like, wow, who is that guy?
I know.
Yeah. I'd like to meet him, right?
You know? Yeah.
He's pretty awesome. Well, and one of the phrases that you're kind of, in the quote I was saying is passionate ease, is that you might even want to say what your interpretation of that, but kind of the passion and the ease of life. So would you like to tell our listeners?
Yeah. Well, passionate ease sounds almost, like impossible to bring them together. And, I spent years as a meditator, first with the focus on ease. And it was kind of like a mood, like you had to be kind of like expanded, but there wasn't a lot of room for the passion to come up, because it's always been considered that that gets you in trouble. And you grasp onto things, and that's how you get passionate. You hold on, and then all of a sudden you're out of the flow of life. Mm-hmm. Well, it comes to be that if you're really in the flow, you're alive. You're really alive, because life begets more life. And life doesn't, when we're in a meditative state and we're in our body, not just a meditative state that leaves the body, then we are in touch with the very impulses of life in its natural state to evolve, to create more beauty, more connection. And that's life has a passion to what I've experienced, to have all of it celebrated. And even more than that, there's a connection when I go deeper now and have met more of my human objections to being fully human and being fully present with what's been difficult. I experience this grace that's holding it all. Mm-hmm. And that has a passion for me. I experience that the creator attends to the creation with exquisite attention. And all that's been in the way of that has been a lot of my journey, is meeting the traumas that say I'm separate, I'm not enough, I'm alone, I'm scared. And all of that is there. It's part of the journey. It's not to be transcended or gotten rid of. So I get to have the experience of a life that's got plenty of challenge, but amazing gifts that have come through in tough situations, where all of a sudden I get it. The grace is here. And if I go towards the difficult thing, it ignites this aliveness and this love. And it turns out that life is passionate and ease is there, and they go together.
I want to go back though to something you said that I think our listeners, it's so vital for people to hear, because so many times I have found that people are trying to transcend their pain, get beyond it, rise above it, be positive, be loving. And yet a big part of what I think I just heard you say is, yes, but the loving is also in embracing and going into and being willing to feel that humanness that we are. That's actually what grace, I think when you're talking about grace, the grace is looking for that. That's the passion side of ease. When they come together, it's a beautiful combination, but it's not about transcending.
Do you agree?
Well said. Yeah. It is counterintuitive to go towards pain, because our very survival was built at an early age to avoid pain, of course. Mm-hmm. So what we do then, and much of this pain that still runs most people's lives was anchored very early, before there was even a whole cortex part of the brain that could have an observer that says good, bad, or whatever, and put it into a context. It's just this raw experience of overwhelm. And so it's overwhelm, and that's threatening to our organism and to our sense of self. So then we establish a sense of self that's based on avoiding that and getting love from some other source. Because when you avoid pain, you avoid being in the moment.
Yeah.
You avoid being with yourself, because that's where yourself lives. Your mind could be in China, but your body and that part of you actually is here. But most people identify with their mind. And we go, hey, I can get a driver's license. I can use my mind to get a degree. I can do all these things. Why can't I fix this reaction in me that starts to distance when I get up in front of people to talk, or when I start to get vulnerable, or when I get to a certain level in a relationship, or? And all of those reflexes are deeper in the nervous system, and they can't be fixed by the mind, by the type of part of the mind that's the discursive part, that's the same part that can figure it out. But we try, because that's our reference. So that's what we get a sense of self with, and yet it's based on compensating for the terror of meeting something that felt like we were going to be annihilated. And the trick is, everybody says, well, yeah, of course I don't want to go there. It is terror. But there is a way to titrate it, that you actually get the confidence that every time you go towards something that's at a sensorial pain, physical level, right when your emotions or your thoughts are spinning, boy, all of a sudden there's a spaciousness and a confidence, and your life isn't as reactive. The next time a trigger comes up, all of a sudden you have more space to act out what you really wanted to. Mm-hmm. So it comes down to where the rubber meets the road, is where our awareness can come into our embodied sensing, right in the middle of a trauma reflex that we may not even know is a trauma reflex, but we're in a reaction and we have some chatter, and then we come back into sensation and breath. And yes, those working with those two things, it transforms people so beautifully. I mean, I see miracles, people who have been working on themselves forever with all the great tools that are out there. But when this piece is included, the body sensation with it, you get right to where that physical anchor to the defended sense of self lives. And it gets held by presence. And it feels like it's got loved. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
I mean, I think I just want to, I think this is so rich. And I think it's hard, but it's also simple in some respects. I think what it's hard for us to do, because it's so counter to our brains and our spinning heads that love that, to come down to, oh, let me take a breath. Let me actually go into this sensation instead of into this story or this emotional landscape. I don't have to understand it. I just have to be with something. And I think you talk about that a lot in terms of this notion of intimacy too, like be intimate with it, get to know that sensation, not get to,
get rid of it
or fondle some story or emotion, but really let yourself come to know this, be in the sensation. And that breath and that awareness and sensation is what frees things up. is kind of the
simple. And I think, you know, when you were talking about how when we're little kids, because a lot of people say, oh, I didn't have a traumatic childhood. But almost when you're talking about a little person who hasn't had a fully formed brain and takes everything in so like a sponge, of course, we're going to get overwhelmed and be like, this doesn't feel good. How can I get control over it and push it away? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like almost all of us grow up surviving by trying to get rid of that, whatever, you know, the scary reaction. I don't like that. And so it's, and I really appreciate that. How can I be with what's happening? Because it's like with you're talking about the breath and you're expanding my, I'm expanding my container to be with what's really happening inside, as opposed to looking very efficient and getting work done, because that's how I survived, is being very busy. Mm-hmm. That's my one of my reflexes, is what work can I do? Which, you know, on the outside world looks really successful, but I'm still away from me. So it doesn't feel satisfying. There's a gap in that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's,
That's quite a journey. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, I didn't know I was living with an immense amount of shame and lack of self-confidence, because in my family, you were valued if you were tough and you just accomplished and you just faced your fears in that realm. And for me, so it was sports and growing up in a tough neighborhood and not just surviving, but trying, looking good. And I did. I looked good through a lot of things in life. And I got to a point where I was like, I've really got this. But on some level, I felt something was missing. And then when I started to go in a direction of what's running all this drivenness that's so attached to how it's seen, or that it's just an identity of me having it together. And don't ever say anything to me that makes it sound like I don't have it together. My shame reflex would come up and be defensive. And I finally got to see that, especially when it was making relationships bad, because it wasn't vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And the vulnerability of being intimate was like, wait a minute. I have to stay on top of things. So I'm going to take my attention away from this vulnerable place and go do, be more doing than being. Mm-hmm. And after enough messed up relationships, it broke my heart open. Mm-hmm. And I started to ask bigger questions. And then I had to face some things, some big things. And there was grace to hold it.
I mean, I often think about the idea that, you know, and, you know, when you crack, it's such a, you think that that's not a good thing, but that is actually the best opportunity. I mean, you know, Leonard Cohen said it well, that's what lets the light in. But, you know, there have been other wise beings who have talked about that notion of cracking open is actually the way forward. But that is so, I mean, I think in your work, you often talk about go towards the resistance, you know, which is another counterintuitive kind of.
Like not even making resistance wrong. Like, no, I don't want to meditate, or I don't want to do this. And like, turning towards the part of me that doesn't want to do this, and like making it all okay, which is really a blessing.
It's a great lesson that the divine, that there is something that is unconditionally loving, and it's our soul. And every time we include our humanness, it's like, and that includes all our reactions, all our resistance, and we include it not just as a concept, but as a sensation, because then you're right there feeling. Then all of a sudden, you become more present, and in the presence, you're an inclusiveness that's like, oh, that lost child is now here, gets to be held. That lost child. It's really aligning with the soul, because the soul is like, hey, the soul's not going to die. It knows it's got this. It wants to have a lot of experience. It's here to have complete experience, and not necessarily good or bad. It's just, let me be here and have all this. Well, when you start to allow all of this, your soul comes in more. You become more passionate of your soul. Your soul's passion shows up. You become more alive and more open and more inclusive, and your heart opens in a way that you've never been able to love, starting with yourself just the way you are.
Which is such a, you know, great place to start, with yourself. It's usually the hardest one to accept in some respects, you know, but
and without which all the other stuff becomes kind of a burnout.
Yes, For sure.
And even, I think it was, Susan was reading Gabor Mate's newest book about trauma, We Leave the Body. And no wonder coming back in and being with the sensation of resistance, the sensation of reaction, the sensation of shame, what that, and being with it.
That's the hardest one.
Yeah.
But that's what kind of helps integrate and make the container bigger.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah. Yeah. Our capacity as a human is so huge. I mean, humans can adapt so much, but we love comfort because it feels safe and we're familiar. And yeah, growing is going to be an edge. So there's going to be resistance. It's a sign you're on the right track.
And I love that idea because I think that capacity is really often the biggest issue. It's, you know, are we willing to develop our capacity to hold what's inside of us and also hold what's between us? Because, you know, and it starts, like I know for me, there was a lot of trauma early on and I don't think I would have been able to go inward at that time. I think, but I did fortunately enough land where people were developing relationships and connection and realness with each other, which allowed me to kind of see, oh, there's something different here. And so I could kind of in the moment discover the possibility of humanity. And that actually was fortunate enough to get me out of my story that it sucked me dry for a long time, which was good. But it's been, and then it's taken me a while now because I'm kind of going the other direction of, okay, but now I can also just be with myself. And I don't even have to necessarily have the container of people in the present to be okay with myself. So it's, I always think it's like reverse engineering this project, but it's worked for me. You know, it's like, you know, both are true. There's a me that I have to come to terms with. And then there's the we. How do I stay in relationship in a real honest way, having the capacity to be across from somebody who I may totally disagree with, but that's not the point. The point is to both be present and see what happens.
Sounds like you used the relation. You started using the relationships to help be your container to start to realize. And let's just say you were on death's door at that point, which I think often is what brings people to this sort of inner work is you. What are the things that you say, like death, divorce, bankruptcy, something like that?
And
like,
disease. Yeah.
Yes, which you had disease, you had, and were, which kind of wake people up to go, wait a minute, something I'm doing isn't working. Can I find another way if I'm interested in it?
Well, and we are at a time where there's a seeming acceleration of this call to be with a lot of stuff, a lot of structures of our societies and our world in upheaval. And so those are times that call upon us to feel more than we might when everything's just kind of going along nice and smooth. But those are the times where the biggest growth can happen. And so what a time to meet all this. I mean, COVID was a precursor in a way because we couldn't go out and just consume or do a lot of outer things. We had to stop and be at home alone now and then more. You know, we had to feel. And people have been doing a lot of things to avoid that. But at some point, the curiosity might come in, and it has. And then feelings come up. And like you said, Susan, you approached it in a way that was honoring your pace. You know, that's kind of a way I would sum it up. That's loving, too, to titrate it, to go in a pace that is not blasting through it, which is what I would I tried to do at first, because that doer approach myself with, okay, we're gonna figure this out. We're gonna get it done, and we're gonna do it now, fast.
I know Chris Marie follows that pattern of yours. You're two people I know that do it that way.
Well, I don't.
But it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
I know, you have.
I have mellowed a bit, even since you.
You have.
Yes.
And the pacing, I mean, it's kind of like, I remember once in the work I was doing, this idea of really, it's not about healing trauma. It's about learning how to touch the trauma and come back. And for me, that is I really globbed onto that because I have watched people who have really horrific stories and sometimes my own where I've just gotten lost in them, swallowed up.
Yeah.
And that is not a useful path. You're not going to get through it that way, I don't think. But if if you learn how to touch it and come back and you do that enough times, you realize, wait a minute. I'm not getting swallowed up in this. I can now, I have the capacity to.
It's kind of like what you were saying before, Lawrence. When you go towards something, you develop the confidence, I can go towards something and I'm not mm-hmm. going to get swallowed up in that same piece.
Yeah. I think of it like, going into a grocery store and you go down this one aisle and there's a baby or a young child in a shopping cart and they want to touch and grab everything and the mother's trying to get the shopping done and they have to we can't take that and the child starts crying and now the mother's reaction based on her need to everything to be looking okay and in public she goes stop that and I know the mm-hmm. feeling when that gets mm-hmm. shut down that it doesn't help the child it usually gets worse mm-hmm. And now there's a conflict. And it's like that inner part of ourself cries out, mm-hmm. out of its innocent whatever, right or wrong, the habit of me would go, stop that, mm-hmm. compared to what's the child really wanting? Well, what if we just stop and, it's wanting something outside, it wants to get fulfillment out here. But what if you show up and you go, come here, honey, we can't do this right now, but I've got you. And mm-hmm. That impulse, but I want that toy. I want that candy. And there's something else holding you so that you go, oh, okay. Now I'm just here. I'm held. And that just, it's a reset mm-hmm. of love in a moment that was so looking outside oneself, trying to mm-hmm. control something or avoid.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think it's so... And that kindness, being kind and gentle I definitely relate to the stop that. Like, I think I'm not even aware, like there's a feeling that's coming up. And I think I'm so quick to I'm pushed that back down and get busy or do something else versus kind of being, I think I keep saying the same thing, but it's what you said, it's simple, but it's not easy. And it's so often all these feelings that are bubbling up to allow it and be with is transformational and hard because of the habits in our nervous system.
Sure. And not just one sensation, it could be many, a flood of things. And yet you just pick one. And sometimes in the middle of a storm, I'll just make a sensation that I can focus on. Like I'll take my fingernails and pinch my thumb pad and just get back in my body sensing. And then all of a sudden, everything else gets more quiet because I'm here more. Mm-hmm. Then I can work through it better.
Because you're getting present, landing back in.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great tip sometimes to think about. Doing something that's sensation-wise, not just going to, having a drink or eating some popcorn, but like create a different sensation, not, because even the sensation of eating that's probably to have the sensation versus you could probably do something else that gave you a different physical sensation. And that would be helpful, maybe more helpful than the popcorn or beer or whatever it is. And then the other thing that I think is so critical is breath. And there's a gazillion ways to breathe. So and probably many that are, but I I've appreciated over the years learning a variety of simple ways, because I think sometimes people think, I've got to do it this way versus, you have a belly breath. I think that you've now kind of anchored in on breathe. Don't
puppy belly breath, you say, don't you?
Yeah, it's not just belly breath. I mean, I've been through a lot of belly breath type of trainings, but when it's a puppy belly, it's like, okay, imagine I have a belly and it's a puppy's belly. I'm laying on my back. That's not just vulnerable. It's trusting.
Yes.
It's innocence. It's pure joy to just, I'm honored when a puppy exposes their belly. I'm a little bit tender about it. It's like, whoa, And then to do that with myself, that all right away just kind of attunes me to my breath. I just, when I tune into how I'm breathing, there's this, a natural softness in my approach. And the belly tends to be where we've pushed a lot of things down, where we don't have a lot of trust. So it can bring up a feeling of, oh, this is too vulnerable. But that's a feeling. It's a sensation, ultimately. And then the breath, I use it to just gently caress sensation, kind of like water gently going down a river or brook, caressing the rock. It's not trying to get rid of the rock. It's just whether it's a jagged or smooth rock, it doesn't matter to the water. The Grand Canyon, millions of years, never an argument between water and rock. It was lovemaking. And so how do we use our awareness and breath as a caress to any sensation without trying to get rid of it? That in itself is a game changer. And then there's all kinds of permutations of what one can do after that with that breath.
But I love that, because that's a couple simple things that people, that we don't tend to go to. We tend to want to go to something super complex, super, you know, because it's got to be hard, right? If we're, versus, puppy breath and not making it, touch it and come back, breathe. Yeah. That's the place to start. Be kind, you know.
Consciously go away from it. Like, okay, I've touched it. I don't have to make this perfect. I'm not fixing it. It's like, okay, just that's enough. Little tap in and then be a passenger for a little while. You don't have to drive the car. Just sit, just hand over the steering wheel. You don't know what you're handing it to, but it's space for grace because you showed up. That's what gives the permission for the grace to come in, because she is not going to impose you to be any different, but she comes when you're willing to show up. And then not to keep doing, but to give space. Then you get to, then it happens. So it's not just another doing.
That is so important.
I love how when we started working with you, a long time ago, the whole idea of the unmeditation where, you know, there's nothing you need to do or fix or improve, or, and you can't do this wrong. That sort of, to get out of that doing perfect sort of mind, and then there's space to actually, you know, get intimate, like what is happening inside. And I think it's a really different approach than even what you started with, transcendental meditation, where you're trying to rise above. I'm going to guess, I don't know much, but what you've been teaching for years is to this, like being with the sensations in meditation. And that's the, and then also being okay if you space out and then you come back in. Like there's so much permission to be, where I'm giving myself permission in that process to be just as I am and to not, you know, beat myself up that I'm not doing it perfectly. All those things that, you know, I do in everyday life that I'm trying to shift those patterns, because these are really, we're dealing with reflexive patterns. Isn't that what we're, can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah. That's the key. I mean, how many times we've had good intentions, but then we go and stay up late eating chocolate cake or whatever, you know, or we do just the opposite of what we had an insight needed to be done. And it's the reflex part that says, that's not who I am. I'm not comfortable being different than what I'm familiar with. So let's find a way to distort that or reflex away from it. So the first step is to actually give permission where you're at. And so I often ask people to literally use their inner commenter to formally give permission for what's happening right now. It's okay that I have total resistance right now, that I do not want to feel this. It's okay that I'm having a gazillion thoughts. It's okay that I want to sit down. It's okay, I want to check out. It's okay, I want that beer. And it doesn't mean you have to act on it, but inside, you give a permission, and then you just let that seep in. You just let that, it's okay. Because there's a background discursive commenter always saying, this is safe, this is not, be vigilant here, this is not good, you need to be different. And all of a sudden, we're using that, which we pay a lot of more attention to than I wish we did. and we say, okay, let's use that very powerful tool and formally say, it's okay to have all those things we don't want. And just stay in the moment or stay with the body and the sensing while that happens as best you can. And at times you're gone. So, okay, you're gone. You can't help that. And then when you come back, that permission again. And you might think, well, this isn't that different than most of my time. I'm all of life is going on. My thoughts are running away like they always do. But the difference is you have a relationship with it this way.
That's
all the difference. And then you start, that's in the direction of going towards. It starts with a relationship that's not judging it or making it wrong. Then going towards it is just another step that's still not trying to fix it. It's like, well, how do I even give it so much permission that I breathe into this and I feel the sensations happening? That gets included too. Whoa, okay. Well, how does that feel? Wow, all of a sudden I feel more spacious and more open, and it's not so scary to be open. More than that, I kind of feel more alive and ease and passion all at the same time. How'd that happen?
Yes.
Yeah. It's true. You know. So this might be something different just for our listeners. For those of you that are trying to do meditation, it's a different form of meditation to be in relationship, in the body, and permission for everything to be okay. It certainly has been I guess for me, Lawrence, in working with you, it's been, I guess just, it feels more like a human type of meditation versus I'm trying to become some yogi and like strive to be that person. It's more, I get an opportunity to embrace who I am right now and having that just be enough and good. And so it's a form of self-love in a lot of ways.
It is, but most people don't know the truth of this, but we are souls trying to have a human experience. And we go, okay, I've had enough human experience. How do I get back to soul? That's the way, that's why for so long it's been about you get there when you die, or let's transcend it. Let's just go into the expansion. But actually, when you have a more complete experience of the humanness, the very things that are like, oh, this is so, and you go towards it so completely, that's when the expansion happens. And you get this huge secret that in the contraction is the most expansion. And it lives here in this body, in this humanness, in all this personality. And I don't have to run away from it. I can be here and you're more here. And you show up with more of your soul. And that's love. Your soul is pure love when it's showing up. You're just alive with that.
Yeah.
What?
It loves that. The soul loves that.
The soul loves that.
It's like, you know, we think the soul is looking for
a perfection,
which is really, that doesn't, you know, that's probably pretty boring for the soul, you know, like,
Have you ever been around somebody who's perfect?
Well, they think they are.
Or they think they are. Either way, it's like, okay.
This is really,
not much connection there.
Can I take a breath now?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, it's true.
Very true. So, yeah.
And I just love what you're saying there at the biggest contraction is an opportunity for the expansion. If I can be with that, which do you think shame is that big contraction a lot of times.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's one of the things that, you know, there's so much out there now. In some respects, it can be a little bit of avoiding shame. And I actually think shame gets sometimes a bad rap. It's like shame is actually the best, an incredible moment to know myself better. If I am not, now shaming is something different. That's when I can't tolerate the shame and throw it out at somebody else. But actually shame itself, that raw, hot emotion that comes up when I'm like, I don't like this, is such a beautiful opportunity. If I just think of it as, oh, this is something I should
not,
really look
not
at.
Think at it.
Not like, think of it. That be, probably gets in the way. Be with it. You know? Yeah. Yes.
It is the hardest one. And you're right. It is the most powerful doorway because of all the things our ego structure has been built around. It's to avoid the annihilation it feels like of itself. Its job is to keep you busy so you don't feel the what's underneath the whole ego structure, which is avoid shame, because shame says you don't get to exist. You don't even deserve to exist. So when you meet that sensation, you're meeting a lot of resistance. But if you stay with the sensation, it starts to wear away the rock. And and not only that, the rock gets to still be there. The ego gets to go, you're not getting rid of it. That's just the ego trying to get rid of itself. You're just showing up so much, the ego relaxes and it starts to collaborate with everything. Yeah. But shame is the biggest doorway to meet the sensation of it.
Yeah. That's probably the key. And it's hard, but I actually love talking about this. This has been very cool to have you on our podcast. Now,
any closing things that you want to say to people that just as a takeaway for them to go and think about in terms of being with themselves?
Yeah.
Well, I wish I could transmit on this call the great love that actually is holding everything. And it doesn't look like it at this time, but it's always been my experience that when it looks darkest and I am willing to just not react to it as much as I want to, and I look for another way to stay in connection with myself and another human in an authentic way, a kind way, a vulnerable way, it builds closeness, and that creates more of the grace in my life, but it spreads. It changes the people around me. It changes our world. And how do you know that? Well, I've just, at this stage of my life, I have a sensitivity that's tuned into that. And I feel the grace behind this crazy time, flushing up all the bullies, flushing up all the inappropriateness of the suppression of the feminine, flushing up all of the things that suppress the human, exposing it, which makes it look like, wow, it's worse than ever. It's just that it's all been hidden before, and now it's on the surface. And I see at the same time more kindness, more people, not only courageous enough to show it, but willing enough to, okay, how do we get something, get bigger enough to hold all of this? We can hold all of this because our heart is connected to the divine heart that holds everything. If I had any one thing to say, trust your heart. It can hold everything that's going on in your life. Just you need to go towards it because it's the best muscle there is. And it gets better the more you use it in getting that capacity to hold, go towards. And get help to do it, because some of this stuff is just like, I need help. And we do. That's part of the deal. We need to do this together.
I love the way you're kind of more, it's an inspirational or hopeful message for me, like, because the flushing up of all the things that have been repressed, so it can look like a bad time versus, hey, we're just exposing and we can hold it all. Just like we can inside ourselves, you know, when you start to do inner work, a lot of stuff comes up and you're like, I don't know if I can hold it.
Well, I think so much of what we're going through on a global level right now is this exposure of shame that a lot of people we're only going to be able to hold that if we can each somehow learn to hold it together in some sort of capacity. It's not a, you know, and that's going to, I think that's what you're talking about. And I think that heart muscle is the best bet that, you know, to feel that. Cause I think sometimes people think, I mean, I guess I know you've said it so many times, love is the solution. And I do believe that. And I think sometimes love, though, it's a sensation that has a lot of feeling, has a lot of sensation to it. It's not just soft and cuddly. So you have to be willing to feel all of what love is, which sometimes is not easy to feel. Like it's because it's pulsing. It's, you know.
Yeah.
I want people to say that, because I think sometimes they think holding this should feel good. And it's like, it won't always, but you have the capacity. And that's what you want to hold on to. I think that's the hope. That's actually our opportunity.
I mean, of all the acts of love, one of the biggest and most powerful is showing up in the midst of love bringing up its opposites, because love does that. It brings up all the lost children that's been hiding in the closet saying, nope, there ain't no love. I'm just staying here alone. I'm alone. And screw you. Don't go showing me love. And, you know, okay, that the love opens and all of a sudden that comes up and says, no way. And then both can coexist. The showing up that stays. I mean, that's what, without that capacity, that's why people run away from all kinds of things. their children, starting with their inner child, gets mirrored.
Yeah, so true.
Well, this is, I am so glad that you, I had to kind of chase you to get you on the podcast, but I so love your teachings.
I love you guys' enthusiasm and your wisdom and how you put things together and your service, the great service you're giving.
Well, thank you. And I love your wisdom that we get to share with our listeners. So thank you, Lawrence.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thanks for joining us. We hope you found today's episode valuable. We know you're busy, and we want to make it easy for you to understand how conflict may be showing up in a way that's impacting your team negatively. We recorded the first three chapters of our book for you to listen to for free.
Get your free audio sample at thriveinc.com/free sample. That's thriveinc.com/FREESAMPLE.